eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The truth is most of us are brushing our teeth all wrong, or not for long enough, or we forget to change our brush on time. And that's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than better brushing, but not Quip. So what makes Quip so different? For starters, Quip is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes while still packing the right amount of vibrations to help clean your teeth. Quip's built-in timer helps you clean for the dentist-recommended 2 minutes with guiding pulses that remind you when to switch sides. And Quip subscription plans are for your health, not just convenience. They deliver new brush heads on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for only $5, including free shipping worldwide. Plus, they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers who use Quip every single day. Quip starts at only $25, and if you go to getquip.com/Rome right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/Rome. GETQUIP.com/Rome. Getquip.com/Rome.
I felt like, you ever seen The Incredible Hulk when you hear that doom, 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 doom?
Right.
And I felt something brewing deep inside of me, man. Deep, deep, deep inside of me that I felt coming up. And so it was Seattle, Washington. I wanted to go outside and say, let me just get out of here. As I walk out, I see the guy sitting down, just sitting down right there. And, you know, I lost it. I choked the guy out.
Welcome to the Jim Rome Podcast. This is episode 37, and my guest is former NBA guard Keon Dooling, the 10th overall pick in the 2000 NBA draft out of Missouri. Dooling was a dozen years into his NBA career when he walked into Danny Ainge's office and he quit the sport. 12 seasons in, with a new contract inked to stay in Boston, and Keon, quote, saw a ghost, which triggered a memory that he had buried away for 25 years. It took therapy to begin to process and make sense of the 25 years of pain that he experienced. And after finally sharing that story with family and friends about what happened to him as a 7-year-old boy, he's now sharing that experience with everybody else in an attempt to elevate this conversation and help others. So the voicemail is going to stay on the shelf this week. I do not want it to interfere with Keon's story. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and this edition of the Jim Rome Podcast is dedicated to a very important topic. Ep 37 gets started right after this word from my friends at Simple Contacts. Listen, there are a million things which demand your time. Contact lenses should not be one of them. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in just minutes. No more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or your computer, and it's reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed prescription, and you can reorder your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. Do you have an unexpired prescription? Simply upload a photo or your doctor's information and order your lenses. Please note, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it is vision care for the 21st century. The vision test is only $20. The contact lens prices are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free. And best of all, we are offering a promotion for our listeners. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome. Or enter code Rome at the checkout. $30 off. $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter the code Rome at checkout. Keon, it's so good to see you, man. It's been a little while. It's been a minute or two, but it's great to have you on the podcast. I'm really happy to see you. How are things?
Man, things are fantastic right now. And Jim, thank you, man, for sharing your platform with me and allowing me on the show. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'm glad we could do this. Now, you've written a book, and the book is called What's Driving You? How I Overcame Abuse and Learned to Lead in the NBA. You also share your story in, I think, an amazing piece in the Players Tribune. And I want to get to both those things. But let's talk basketball for just 1 minute.
Let's talk hoops.
Let's talk some hoops. Now, you look at your career. I mean, literally, and you say it yourself, you came from almost nothing, but you played your college ball at Missouri. You go on to be a top 10 pick overall in the NBA. You played 12 years plus in the NBA. By all appearances, you were living the dream and living your best life. What was it like? What was that time like for you?
Well, I mean, you know, the NBA, it's a double-edged sword, you know, because on one hand, you know, you have the money, the fame, and you're at the pinnacle of your particular field. So, you know, that's exciting. That's intoxicating. And, that part of my life was unbelievable. But also, you know, what comes along with that platform is a lot of other things, you know, that you have to grapple with, things from the past. You're subject to, you know, being extorted, you know, people, you know, hurt you a lot, whether it's financially or whether, you know, just trying to take advantage of you. And so, you know, as great as it is on one hand, you know, it heightens your experience because you experience a lot of negativity as well. And we don't really get to share that. Nobody really cares that, you know, athletes go through, you know, hardships as well. So it's not that sexy to hear about.
No, it's so true, right? Because I've often said this about athletes. We don't know you guys. We don't know you guys. Based on what? Based on watching you guys play, based on an interview, based on social media. We really don't know any of you guys. And to your point, hey, look, we are people. We are human. We go through things as well. And I think to your other point, we don't want to know, right? Fans don't want to know. They've got their own issues. They're going to you to get you to help us forget about us, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what we do is, I mean, sports, I believe, is one of the biggest platforms. It brings people together. It's a great uniter. Different cultures, different races, different religions, different everything can come together in the art of sport, you know. And so you don't necessarily want to hear about, you know, a lot of negativity and things like that. But I don't believe, you know, people's experience is always negative. I think, you know, it's power in the testimony. And a lot of times people draw motivation, they draw strength, they draw encouragement, they draw, you know, these ideas around athletes. And so, you know, now that athletes are becoming more vulnerable, I believe it's making the athletic experience more rich.
More real. So, again, we don't know exactly what we're seeing. For instance, if somebody's on the outside looking at you and looking at your career, you're a top 10 pick. You played big time college basketball at Missouri. You've had a great career in the NBA. Man, I'd give anything to be that person. But we don't know what's going on. As an example, in 2012, I would say just that. It looked great. Everything looked great. Yeah. You pushed the Miami Heat to 7 games in the conference finals. You signed a new contract. You were in great shape. And training camp was about a month away. It was perfect, yeah. Except you walked into Danny Ainge's office and you up and said, I've had enough. I don't want to do this. Exactly what happened? Why did you tell him that?
Well, I think the first thing that happened was I got triggered. I was using the restroom in Seattle, Washington with a good friend of mine, Avery Bradley. We did some charity work that day through the Game Time Foundation. And I go to the restroom, and as I'm urinating, a guy grabs my butt as I'm peeing. And what happened is it triggered
a drunk guy.
Yeah,
right?
A drunk guy. He had a few drinks or whatever the case might be. But, you know, he was clearly intoxicated, and he decided at that moment that it would be, you know, fun to grab my butt while I was peeing. And so what happened is that basically triggered me. I had something that I had compressed down for all these years. I was abused as a child, and I never had embraced it. You know, I never allowed myself to feel or heal from that experience. And in that moment, I was triggered, and it really took me over the edge, and I started experiencing PTSD at that moment. I didn't know what it was at the time. I just knew that I couldn't slow my thoughts down. I knew I couldn't eat. I knew something was going on emotionally, but I didn't want to face it at that moment. I decided to run, and that was my reason for going to see Danny Ainge to retire.
All right, so that was a trigger. What happened was there was something that happened to you 25 years earlier. Did you tell anybody during that time? Had you discussed that with anybody?
No. I thought it was something I was going to take to my grave. I think what I did is I masked my pain quite a bit. I overcompensated in several areas, being very promiscuous, being very macho as a man. You know, I just overcompensated it for it quite, you know, for the better part of my life. and I masked that pain, and it was something that I thought I was going to take to my grave.
So, Ken, can you say exactly what it was that happened 25 years prior and how old you were when it happened?
Yeah, so when I was 7 years old, it was a rainy day in South Florida, go figure. But we were going to play basketball, me and a good friend of mine, and it started raining. As it started to rain, we go look for shelter. We went to one of my brother's friend's house. He was like, you guys can come on in. He decided at that moment, he was probably about 14, 15 at the time. We were about seven. And he decided to put porn on. He thought that would be a good thing to do at that moment. And, you know, in that process, in that whole moment, you know, that's where he kind of took advantage of us. And he orally raped me.
So you were 17. That kid was 14.
I was
that,
seven.
You were seven. Yeah. He was 14. And that happened. He just took you right off the street and said, come on in. And then you were completely violated like that.
Yeah.
You write about this, that on that day, something inside of you changed forever.
Absolutely.
What's that?
Well, I think, you know, I developed this anger that you know, I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to allow something like that to happen to me again. I started riding with a knife. From that day,
you put a knife in your bike handlebars.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. So everywhere I went, you know, I had a knife at that moment. I became, you know, I started drinking very early. I started smoking very early.
How old?
I started drinking probably 8-9 years old, started smoking around 9-10 years old, started dealing with older young ladies around 11 years old. That moment, it really shifted up my childhood, and it really, changed or tarnished, you know, my childhood.
Literally, your childhood ended that day.
It did. My approach definitely changed to life.
In terms of that abuse, was that just one incident, one isolated incident, or did that happen other times?
No. So I think it's hard for men, you know, and I share that story about the men because I know there's so many men who don't see examples of going through that and coming out the other side. So I thought it was very important. But looking back on it, you know, some of the older young ladies who I did, you know, who I had, you know, encounters with, you know, if you put the shoe on the other foot, you know, that could be considered, you know, abuse as well.
All right. So you grew up like this and then you keep the secret with you for 25 years. I mean, certainly when you're 7 years old, there's no way you can make any sense of this. But as you get older, maybe you start to understand it. Why did you not talk about this? And why could you not tell anybody about this?
I think, you know, there was a part of embarrassment. You know, the fact that it happened from a male to me really played on my ego. I think that was one part of it. The second part of it is fear. You know, if I would have told my dad or my brothers or something like that, you know, how would they have responded? And I'm sure they would have responded with, you know, fury and fire, you know, and so trying to protect them from it. And then just not knowing how to express it, just not knowing what to do, what to say, who. I haven't seen many examples of men talking about their experience about, you know, being sexually abused or anything like that. So I just felt alone and scared, and I just decided that I wanted to hide and run away from it.
Wow. So how in the world were you able to function at as high a level as you did with a secret like that, with something as terrible like that, with inside of you for 25 years? How did you function and cope?
Well, I think, you know, to make it to the, you know, apex in any field, I think you almost have to be flawless at every intersection. And so at every intersection of my process, you know, there was no time to reflect. There was no time to feel. There was a time to achieve and to become. And so, you know, when you're focused and your goals and your dreams are right there, what I was able to do, looking back on it, I was able to channel a lot of that energy, that negative charge energy. I was able to eventually kind of control it and use it to my benefit, you know, through my aggressive play on the basketball court or in the weight room or in my preparation. You know, but, you know, it was something that I grappled with my whole life. And even though I wasn't embracing it, Jim, it was coming out in behaviors, man.
Like it's manifesting itself in other things.
Yes, man. In particular around like my sexual being promiscuous and anxiety is something that I struggled with, you know, for the better part of my life. And I didn't even really understand what anxiety was until I went through the therapy process.
Well, of course, which brings us back to how the conversation started, Cam. When you were in this steakhouse in Seattle, you're in the bathroom, and this guy kind of comes up on you, and he grabs your backside, and then to you said it was a trigger. In fact, you're right, it was a ghost. You saw a ghost. What happened in that moment? What happened after that? How did that play out?
Well, I, you know, at that moment, I walked out of the bathroom initially, you know, and I told everybody what had happened. you know, in the bathroom. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, people with the foundation and the charity and friends of mine. But then I, you know, I just asked myself, you know, I ordered the creme brulee, I believe it was, and a glass of red wine. But I felt like, you ever seen The Incredible Hulk when you hear that doom, 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 doom?
Right.
And I felt something brewing deep inside of me, man. Deep, deep, deep inside of me that I felt coming up. And so it was Seattle, Washington. I wanted to go outside and say, let me just get out of here. As I walk out, I see the guy sitting down, you know, just sitting down right there. And, you know, I lost it. I choked the guy out. And thankfully, one of my buddies had followed me out of the restaurant and was able to pull me off before I could have really, you know, expressed my anger fully through him. But yeah, that was in the moments after, that's kind of what happened.
All right, so then you get back to Boston and you're getting ready for the camp, and that's when you had the meeting with Danny Ainge, and you said, look, I just can't do this. I quit. Yeah. And I'm not sure whether or not he or anybody knew what you were dealing with, but when you said to Danny Ainge, I quit, what was his reaction?
Well, Danny didn't want me to retire. You know, Danny had a lot of respect for me, a great appreciation for what I brought to the organization. But he also knew that I was going through something emotionally, and that it was important for me to do my work and find the healing process. And, you know, and I just told him, I said, Danny, you know, I don't know what I'm going through. I don't know what I'm experiencing, you know, but I can't play under these conditions. I don't want to do that to myself, my family, or the organization. I really love you guys and respect you guys too much. I'm not healthy enough to play. I got to get myself together, you know. And for me, that was the most important thing. Danny, you know, he loved and appreciated me so much that he made me the player development coordinator. So I worked for the Celtics in my first year as I, you know, went through the healing process and started my therapy process. And, you know, that was where I got a lot of my skills, you know, and I'm using those skills today. So I'm always grateful to the Celtics organization for, you know, just supporting me through that.
So they were great too, and you know who's going to stand by you and something like that. So you point out that he was great. Rajon Rondo, Avery Bradley were there. They were great. Doc Rivers was there. Your wife was there. And Keon, you talk about how all of them gave you the same look. They all looked at you the same way when you shared that information, and it's a look that you'll never forget. What was that look? What are you talking about exactly?
You know, I think it was concern for me, love for me, you know, and also fear for, like, you know, somebody who had been so on point, you know, for his entire career. You know, I was first vice president of our union executive committee at the time. I had been a 5-time captain, even though I wasn't a starter. And I was a very consistent person every day in my work ethic. And so for them to see me in a moment where I wasn't myself, and them to not define me at that moment, but to use the whole history of our encounters, you know, it was just love I saw in their eyes.
All right. So at that point, you check yourself into a mental institution in Boston. What was that like?
For me, you know, it was one of the most difficult things that I had to deal with. Obviously, I was experiencing PTSD. I didn't know what was going on, so I knew I needed some help. But the mental institution is not where I got my healing. It wasn't the place for me. For some, it might be great. And though I was in a very vulnerable state, the mental institution wasn't the place for me. If I could avoid everybody from having to go down that path and get them to go to therapy and do their work so they can avoid their triggers, I would rather them take it that way, because it's tough to come back from the mental institution.
So how'd you get out of there? Did somebody pull you out of there? Did you know to leave there? What happened?
Yeah, so about, you know, 4 days into it, you know, Jim, I mean, the medication was very strong. And right as visiting hours happened, you know, they medicate you right before. And so when my family and my coaches would come and see me, you know, the medicine would have an impact on me. So I really was not my best self at that moment. But about the third day, you know, I figured that, hey, I'm in here. It's a reason I'm here. Let me try and build myself back up. So I started going to the classes, and I started eating, and I started praying. And, you know, I found out that I was actually in there voluntarily. And I said, I am? Okay, well, it's time to check out of here. Wow. And so I ended up checking out of the mental institution and going straight to therapy. And therapy is where I really believe the healing process started for me. Changed my life. 3 weeks of therapy, I was able to cover 25 years of not processing pain.
In 3 weeks?
In 3 weeks. I was, Jim, when I tell you, some days in therapy, I was like Tupac Shakur, and I was mad, and the anger would speak out. And some days I would feel like, what is this emotion? Why do I feel so sad and helpless? And I started learning that there's more emotions than just pleasure and pain and anger. And I start learning that there's these different emotions that as men we're told that we shouldn't experience. Perfect example, as men we're told to suck it up, tough it up. You shouldn't cry when...
Don't be soft.
Don't be soft. All these different things that, are unnatural. I mean, the first words that we speak is a cry. If you're not crying when you're born, they'll smack you on the butt again to make sure you cry because it's normal. We have these tear ducts, but we're told not to be human. And a lot of times as men, what we do is we internalize everything we experience, right? And then somebody pushes the wrong button, boom, now it's wartime. And so, like, you know, if you know what you've experienced, if you know what your triggers are, then when people push those buttons, you don't have to react in anger. You can handle the situation a lot better. So that's where I talk about emotional maturity and just kind of growing and evolving and becoming better.
More with Keon in just 1 second. I have got to tell you about Zepa. Zepa, it's spelled Z-Y-P-P-A-H. It is happy Z spelled backwards. If you go to bed with a Zepa, you wake up with happy Z's. Listen, did you know that one night of bad sleep can ruin your entire day? Are you traveling for Memorial Day weekend? Are you planning a summer vacation? You do not want to ruin the entire vacation with snoring all night. Vacations are supposed to be a time for rest and relaxation. Well, how are you going to get any rest if they're snoring all night long? You need to get a Zepa before you take that vacation. Snoring is not sleeping. If you or somebody you know snores, go to Zepa.com. Zepa.com. Zepa is guaranteed to stop that snoring. You've got nothing to lose. If you are not happy for any reason at all, return it for a full refund. Snoring is rude. It's disrespectful. It's offensive. You do not want to ruin another holiday weekend or your summer vacation with snoring. Get a Zepa today. Ensure that you have a great summer. Get a Zepa. And now back to my conversation with Keon Dooling. It's amazing to me that you can go through in 3 weeks of intense therapy, 25 years, but cover as much ground as you did. Let me just go back to the institution for 1 minute because Absolutely. Doc Rivers showed up. Doc
Absolutely.
Rivers showed up.
Every
How
day.
Much did Okay, and right away, by the way, as soon as he found out you were there, right, he showed up. What did that mean to you? And then when Doc said to you, Keon, what's going on? I mean, you'd heard that question a million times, but you answered it differently with Doc, right?
Yeah. I mean, with Doc, you know, the hard part about it is I didn't know what was going on. It wasn't until I, you know, was in the mental institution and I was asking myself, okay, how did I get here?
Right.
Like,
I'm a 12-year NBA player. I'm top of my profession. I'm a super high achiever. Why me? What am I doing here?
How did I get here? And so, you know, I remember, you know, having a conversation with my wife and just sharing with her that, you know, babe, like, I was abused as a child.
Did she know?
She did not. Hmm. And we had been together.
What was that like to tell your wife that?
Oh, it was one of the hardest conversations I had ever had to have. I mean, just as a macho man to explain to your wife that you had been, you know, sexually abused as a child by a man. Hey, man, it was embarrassing for me to share. And her reaction just was like, oh, you just saw her just break down crying. And it wasn't because, you know, I was in the moment and having my breakdown. It was like, baby, I've been here. You could have told me. You didn't have to wear this by yourself all these years. And so her reaction really gave me the strength to be able to go out and talk about it. She says, you know, you got to get yourself strong because, like, you got some people to impact. You got some lives you have to change. And I know God put you through this for a reason. And it's going to be up to you to make an impact on people who go through what you're going through.
And this is what you're doing right now. And before I ask you about that, who is Dr. Timothy Benson?
Dr.
And what did Dr. B tell you?
Well, Dr. Timothy Benson is, in my opinion, one of the best therapists on the planet. He's a high pedigree person. He's very relatable. He's very understanding. I think I call him, you know, the successful folks whisperer because he really helps fix us. If that makes sense. But he's, you know, he was my doctor. He was at Harvard at the time. So I finally made it to Ivy League, but it was for therapy, not school. And, you know, he's I continue to do my work with Dr. B. He's one of the best. And I really appreciate the fact that the tools and the techniques and the information that he gave me, that I'm still working my plan and I'm still building from, you know, those foundational moments when I started therapy with him.
Like you said, you had no idea what was going on, and he put a term on it. He put a name on it, PTSD. When he told you you were suffering from PTSD, what did you think? And did you understand?
Yeah, I thought I understood it almost immediately. The fact that when you go through abuse, a lot of times you blame yourself. You know, hey, man, I shouldn't have put myself in this position. I should have fought him off. Never giving light to the fact that I was 7 years old and I just couldn't. I wasn't strong enough. A lot of times we like to blame people. Oh, it was the parents' fault. It was the infrastructure fault. And a lot of times it's nothing parents or family or your infrastructure can do. With the exception of, you know, give you, you know, the tools to be able to manage. And if I would have known some of the preventable techniques that I'm teaching kids now, maybe I could have avoided that situation. Maybe I could have been more educated to get out of that situation. And so now one of my biggest things is trying to equip kids and youth and people with those tools to be able to say, hey, that's not a healthy touch. Hey, that's not healthy conversation. And we do that all the time through our I Am Respect Tour. That's what kind of where I do the education.
You know, and I want to ask you about that too, but that Players Tribune article, Keon, it's amazing. It's very powerful. It's very courageous. It's very moving, and it dropped a few weeks back, but when did you actually write that?
So I wrote that story about 2 years ago, and I never released it. Look, there has been, like, I have gotten very little, you know, traction around my story. You know, there's been some articles and things that might come out from time to time.
Why do you think that is? You've written a book.
Yeah,
you wrote that piece. It brought you and I back together. Why is there not more traction?
Well, I think it's a timing thing. I think, you know, the topic of mental health is a lot of stigmas associated with mental health.
Still.
In my community, you know, in particular, it's like, hey, a head doctor, a shrink, you're crazy, and all these different terms that...
The African-American community, you mean?
African-American community. Yep. Less than 6% of black men get therapy. And in my opinion, we come from the most traumatic situation in this country. And I think therapy could do us some serious justice in the healing process. I mean, there's other things that, you know, will factor into that, but therapy is a good place to start so you can do your own healing. But I would say that the timing is right now. You know, a delay is not a denial. And though I wish it would have happened 4 or 5 years ago and I could have been around the country speaking about this, I think in that process, man, I learned, you know, so much. I learned the language. I developed programs. And so I'm more prepared now in this moment than I would have been when I first started to tell the story.
So is that why you sat on that for a couple of years? The time was not right. You wrote it, but the time was not right to release it. Yeah. Now the time is right.
Yeah, the timing wasn't right. Nobody really wanted to hear about sexual abuse or mental health at the moment. And when you put your story out there, man, you know, you're very vulnerable, you know, because you're exposing a piece of yourself. And I just wasn't willing to keep exposing and putting out material when nobody was ready to receive it. So I wanted to say, okay, you know what? I'll put it on the shelf. And when the timing is right, you know, I'll release it.
All right. So now the timing is right. What's the feedback been like? Like around the NBA, your peers and people you know, how has this been received? And what's the feedback been like? What are you hearing from people that you know and played with?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. You know, several of my teammates have, you know, reached out to me, you know, thanking me for my courage, you know, retweeting it, you know, sharing the story. It's been amazing, you know, the reception that I've gotten this go around. And I'm so thankful and so gracious, you know, that the NBA Players Association allow me the space to continue to do this work, even though I work for the organization. So yeah, man, this go around has been well received.
So what did you think when Kevin Love started to talk openly about dealing with these issues, when DeMar DeRozan started to talk about this? And it seems to me every time somebody like this steps up and puts themselves out there, because it is a vulnerability issue, it encourages somebody else to say, all right, you know, I'm dealing with some things too. I think I can talk about it too. When you see these things, how encouraged are you?
I am so encouraged. I mean, think about the people who might struggle, you know, with panic attacks and, you know, and how they come and how they hit you. Those things are real and they're not just in your mind. Those symptoms come out physically.
It's not you being mentally weak or soft either. Explain this. Right.
You're just human. And DeMar sharing his story and so many other athletes, you know, talking about, you know, being bipolar and dealing with anxiety and dealing with trauma and all these different things. I think it's so powerful. I think it's so powerful. And I'm so glad that I'm a part of the discussion. And mental health is so layered, you know, it's not just anxiety or schizophrenia or this. It could be a phobia. It could be, you know, you could overcompensate in an area or another, maybe eating too much or not enough, you know. And so it's wide. mental health. It's not one thing. It's a combination of a whole bunch of things that we have to get a better understanding for.
All right, so if we're talking mental health and sexual abuse, these are taboo topics. Folks just don't want to talk about it, especially those who have been victimized. Is it changing? Has the conversation and dialogue been elevated?
I think so. You have the Me Too movement that is, you know, really holding people accountable. You have Terry Crews talking about his experience. That's another male face. You have a lot of people who are talking about these conversations now. And so I think it's healthy. I think the reason why it's so tough to talk about is because there's a generation before us who's been stuck in silence. And what happens in the house stays in the house. What happens in the family stays in the family. And so some of our safe havens have become places where people get victimized, whether that's churches, whether that's schools, even in homes, within families, it happens quite a bit. And so those conversations are very difficult to have because, you know, there could be potential fallout from that. But I believe if you don't have, if you don't deal with that and if you don't attack it as a family, then those generational curses will continue in your family. And the same test will show up in your life until you pass.
To break the chain, especially for something that horrible, right?
You do. And sexual abuse is something that has to change. It happens.
You know, you mentioned that when you talk to youngsters, even adults, there are certain things that are not okay, that are not permissible, things that they should look out for that nobody ever told you back then. Can you share a couple of thoughts? What's the types of things that you talk to youngsters about and even adults?
Yeah, well, the first thing with youngsters, you know, you want to teach them what a healthy touch is. Hey, these are your private areas. They're off limits to everyone. So, you know, empowering, having, you know, these regular conversations that we make taboo. But look, I tell you, you know, the kids are dealing with crazier things on their computer than the conversations we can have. Telling them what healthy dialogue is, having that conversation with them about, you know, how was your day? You know, how did that make you feel? If you see your kids and they're, you know, oversleeping or doing something, if their behavior is changing or if they get more distant or something like that, you don't just want to ignore those symptoms. You know, you want to say, hey, babe, you okay? Let's talk about something. Do you need some help? Are you experiencing anything? And then I also think that parents have to be vulnerable enough to share their experience, what they went through, what they encountered. I talk to my kids about what I went through, so that hopefully they don't have to go through it and their kids don't have to go through it. But the healthy, the conversations are healthy. They teach them, they their education, and then the application of it, being able to, you know, apply those strategies and these tools that you've learned.
Education and application, communication, education and application. If somebody's listening right now and they're hurting and they don't know where to turn, they don't know what to do, What would you tell this person?
So the first thing I would say, Jim, is that it's okay if you're hurting. You know, my healing process will be never ending. I'll be continuing to heal the rest of my life, and I'm committed to that process. And so the first thing, if you're going through something, you know, currently or something in your past, if somebody hurt you, broke your heart, if somebody abused you, took advantage of you, manipulated you, made you do something that you didn't want to do at that moment, I would say the first thing is to embrace that hurt, that it does hurt. The second thing I would say do is like pray about it. You know, whatever your deity is, whatever your God is, pray to your God and ask for that strength and ask for that healing. For me, it's my Christian faith. The third thing I would say do is, man, go get some therapy. Therapy. It's the gateway of healing. You know, it's a place where if I tear a ligament, I go to the best surgeon. If I have a tooth issue, I make sure that I'm going to the best person who can do my implant. I'm going to the specialist. But if your heart and your head is hurting, where do you go? The place you go is therapy. They can't tell anybody, so they can't gossip about you. They can't go and run and tell your secrets because that's against the law. They're trained in this, so that means they have the skill set to be able to manage your condition, your expertise, or whatever you know you're experiencing. So I would say the third thing is to go get some therapy.
That's how you got better, right?
That's how I got better. I took a holistic approach, physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional. And I worked my plan daily.
All right. So if listeners want to get your book, where do they get your book?
So you can get my book on Amazon. It's online. You can also get it on my website, What's Driving You. You can also get it on my social media. But the book is awesome. It's called What's Driving You. I put artwork with the book. Some people heal visually. I put a soundtrack with it. Some people heal through their ear gate. And I wrote an incredible story. I went back to the locations where I was abused to write that part of the book.
What was that like?
It was cathartic. I remember crying. I remember certain smells and certain moments coming back, you know, when I went to that place.
But those were triggers, weren't they?
They were triggers, but they were healthy triggers because, you know, I had done my work.
Okay.
You know, and I wasn't still in the PTSD battle, but I was in the healing process. And so I wouldn't say it was triggers. I would say it was more so like closure for me.
Hmm. So, Ken, if people want to reach out to you,
yes.
Can they communicate directly with you?
Absolutely.
Through social? What's the best way
Absolutely.
To do that?
Absolutely. Through social media. I do a lot of life coaching. You know, a big part of my business. And it's unfortunate. Fortunate, but unfortunate. Most of my clients are executives in the tech industry and stuff like that. But I really want to work with more people, you know, who have pain like me. And who, you know, experience things like me, because I feel like I found a recipe for healing and it's really working for me and my family. And I'm so much better as a person that I really want to share it and coach people and give them the tools that cost me a couple dollars, you know, to be able to go and get myself healthy. And I want to be able to share those tools much more efficiently.
Yeah, I think it's a conversation that has to be had. I'm so glad that you and I can have this conversation and you have this platform and that you've put yourself out there. This
Thank
cannot
you.
Be an easy thing to do. So they should read your book. They should see the Players Tribune article, which is outstanding. And they can find you on social media as well. Ken, I could talk to you about basketball for about an hour, but I want to talk about this. I think this was a really important conversation and I'm really glad that you and I can get caught up. Next
Thank
time,
you.
Let's talk some basketball, but I'm glad that you and I could have this conversation.
Hey, thanks so much, Jim, for having me. And then the last thing I would love to say to the listeners is that, hey, the biggest room in your house is the room for improvement. And I'm telling you right now, improvement is yours. Greatness awaits you. There might be some challenges. There might be some obstacles that you might have to overcome. But I'm telling you, if you push forward and you work hard and you work your plan and you allow yourself to heal and you build yourself back up, I'm telling you, success and greatness awaits you. So meet me there. I'll see you at the top.
Meet you there. Keon Dooling, my guest. So good to see you, man. I appreciate you very, very much. Great to see you, Keon. Thank you,
Jim. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Let me tell you something. Look at your calendar. 2018 is flying right on by, and we all want to continue to elevate our game to that next level and make this year the best year ever. Well, if you're a contractor or a builder or a remodeler, listen up, because elevating your game for the rest of 2018 got a whole lot easier thanks to my pals at Lumber Liquidators and their new LL Pro Plus program. LL Pro Plus is Lumber Liquidators' new pro services team that you can call on for all of your professional flooring needs. LL Pro Plus will help you absolutely destroy it this year with professional pricing and dedicated support to get you exactly what you need when you have to have it. Then you get your projects finished on time. LL Pro Plus gives you the ultimate value and quality. And with LL Pro Plus, no job is too large, no job is too small. So you put the flooring experts on your team today. Visit your local Lumber Liquidator store or go to lumberliquidators.com. Let's continue to make 2018 the best year ever with Lumber Liquidators. As I said before, this is a very serious conversation and a heavy one, but incredibly important and one that I'm happy to have right here. And I want to thank Keon Dooling once again for sharing it with us. If the message resonated with you, make sure you hit him up. He's at Keon_Dooling on Twitter. I'm at Jim Rome. Keon is looking to continue the conversation with anybody who needs to, so go ahead and take advantage of that handle. Also, while you're here, make sure to review, subscribe, and share. Let's keep the pod thriving, and I appreciate it very much. Also, I announced on the daily program that I've been honored with a National Radio Hall of Fame nomination, and coming up in a few weeks, you will be able to vote on that. So keep it locked in on the Jungle or right here in the podcast for more information that's coming up really soon. 37 down, Ep 38 coming up next week. I'll see you then. Thank you for listening.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.